Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's your boy Johnny Bananas, and I'm going to be covering a brand new season of The Challenge USA on CBS that, of course, I will be completely dominating on my podcast, Death Taxes and Bananas, on the Ringer Reality TV Podcast. Head over to that feed and follow us on Spotify so you never miss an episode.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
I need sports staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me in the studio, also canceled after one season, It's Andy Greenwald!
You had a different cadence that time.
But I stuck with you, man. I always had your back.
That's true. When the when the internet turned against me, you were like, no, he's good, actually.
Yeah, when everybody was just like, get this True Detective-hating dude out of my face. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's my guy.
I appreciate that.
Greenwald, great to see you. We were joined again by Kaya McMullen, who's back producing us. So I just feel like the vibes, they're all corrected, you know?
Yeah, she's stateside again.
Wonderful to see you. How's your week been since I last saw you?
It's great. When does school start?
Dude, it's back. I you know, I was just saying to you, it's like now.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with me. Got to get this checked out, but I've dropped. I have like I buy these coffee makers that are like for single bachelors, even though I'm a married man. But they're really easy to like make counter space. You can just pick it up and move it over. So it's like a 5-cup coffee maker.
Right.
And they come in these cool colors. They're like $30.
All right.
I have now dropped 2 of them in the last month and broken them.
Are you freezing up like Moscow Mitch?
I was wondering about this too. It makes me feel empathy, you know? But I dropped mine today.
Does it shatter?
The carafe shatters, you know?
You just shatter glass across.
Yes. First thing in the morning, shatter glass at like 8 a.m.
That's chill.
Spent 15, 20 minutes sweeping it up. Mm-hmm. Then was like, I'm getting in my car. I'm going to go get myself a cup of Mocha Joe's. And it's just gridlock traffic outside my house because every single child is being dropped off by an individual Audi e-tron.
Yes.
And they've just like turned my street into Times Square.
First of all, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, thanks.
For you and your palsy. Like stuff.
Yeah, and my need to go to Loch Alome, yeah.
It's fine. Uh-huh. I have no concerns, broader concerns. My children aren't in school yet.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of dadding. I would say, and look, I love it.
Comes with the contract.
I love it. I call myself doing something. I'd like to get your, and we'll talk about TV.
We got a bunch of stuff to talk about today.
I'd like to get your opinion about this. Is what I'm about to tell you, like, very, very dad in like a charming way, or like a, okay, buddy, you're an onion headline kind of way? Which is to say, I played the new Olivia Rodrigo single for my daughters.
What's that one called?
It's called Bad Idea, Right?
Okay.
It's very good.
Yeah, I've heard some songs from this new LP.
Our old buddy Karen Gans wrote a great profile in the New York Times. People should check it out. Very good song, very funny. 100% about rebound sex with an ex.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think my 6-year-old picked up on any of that. I heard her in the back seat when there's a line where Olivia is like, you're the hottest guy I've ever seen.
Yeah, she's like,
she was like, he must have been sweaty.
Yeah.
Because it's 99 degrees here. And so she thought, so I appreciated the innocence. But anyway, I played that song and they liked it. And by the way, this is another cool move. My older daughter has this thing that I really respect because I think she knows in her bones what her dad is, her dad's project.
Uh-huh.
So if I play a song, she sits in absolute stillness, no reaction, and makes me turn and say, so? In this case, I knew she was going to be like, I loved it. Best okay. song ever.
So but, you were but, like, but, you were out scouting Rodrigo for your kids. Like you were like, I've ascertained.
I'd heard this song and I was like, they'll dig this.
Right.
It has the right combination of angst and Broadway.
Super cool.
You know, which is what they want. But here's my point. Here's what I did. This is the thing I want your opinion on.
Uh-huh.
Then I was like, you guys like that? You know what it makes your old man think of? And then I fired up L7's Pretend We're Dead.
Oh my God.
Which
dude.
It sounds like.
Yeah. So you're that guy now.
I became that guy. And yeah. I was like, you guys like this? This
you
is
should
pretty
tweet
cool.
about it. You should be like, just jam in on some L7 with the kids this morning. Loved being a hashtag dad.
Dad strong.
Hashtag L7 dad.
That I played yesterday, a little Elastica.
Yeah, of course.
Just trying to connect the dots. They don't care.
Yeah.
Do you think is this
I think it's just a little early for them to understand the alternative music canon and like the trajectory of, you know, from the Velvet Underground and the Stooges to now.
But then I'm like waiting to get on the 101 and I'm like, you know, funny story. There's a band called Wire. And people in the 90s thought Elastica ripped up. But is this bad? Do I need to stop?
I mean, not for me. I think it's really funny. I think maybe for your relationship with your children, you might want to like get back to the Zelda takes.
Just pump the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They mostly want to talk about Zelda. So they literally say to me, can we talk about Zelda now? Like, can we just block out some time?
Yeah. Do you have to like just ask questions or do you actually have opinions about Zelda?
You know how every so often on the podcast, you'll be like, my wife and I have watched 22 seasons of SVU.
Yeah.
Ask me anything. And I'll be like, there's always new surprises. I'm pretty deep in Tears of the Kingdom. I could do a podcast about that.
Cool.
Would be the sound of Chris putting his
headphones
down?
Like the last pod we do is in the left channel, it's you talking about Tears of the Kingdom. And the right channel, it's me talking about Lioness.
You could actually take that pod off and just run your drug church interview again in the right channel.
Yeah.
And then it would just be like our true selves.
Sure. Andy, I have a couple of things I want to talk to you about as news. We're going to talk a little bit about Reservation Dogs. I want to ask you, I want to talk a little bit about the end of Justified City Primeval.
Okay.
So we have some shows we're hitting. We might hit How To with John Wilson again, because that certainly took a turn. But some news in the top. HBO released a statement.
Okay.
Picked up by all the trades.
Of course.
Quote, statement, quote, The Idol was one of HBO's most provocative original programs, and we're pleased by the strong audience response.
Mm.
After much thought and consideration, HBO, as well as the creators and producers, have decided not to move forward with a second season.
Mm.
We're grateful to the creators, cast, and crew for their incredible work. Mm-hmm. Kaya, I think you might want to put on Danny Boy.
I want to hold space for you to have a reaction here.
I think we ended in the right place. I think we all had fun. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy it being now part of my public persona that I enjoyed it.
You really put that on Front Street.
I was just being honest.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed watching The Idol. I really liked it until it was a little bit harder to like.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily see a second season for this.
Mm-hmm.
For a moment, I wondered whether or not this could be an anthologized thing and they could have figured out like a different story to tell in the music business or in the world of this.
Like another cult.
Yeah. I mean, like nothing ever really dies, right?
Like
they could have figured out something else. Like they could have been like, oh, there's something here, but let's, you know, maybe like there's not a Jocelyn. It's not Jocelyn and Tedros. It's something else.
So like they could ask other platinum recording artists who have big houses. Could be like, could we film more sex parties in this house?
No, my new version of it would be very like Calvinist. I wouldn't want any sex.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'd want to just think about the music mostly.
Like Playboy for the articles, right? Like the Idol
The Idol cut. Season 2, you driving around in an electric car.
Be like, girls.
Causing traffic jams in residential neighborhoods.
In my day.
While you think about Elastica.
Yeah. First of all, more people should think about Elastica. Uh-huh. I will die on that hill. Yeah, this is a tough one. Did you send me, was there a headline somewhere where someone was like, what will the cast of The Idol do next?
I did not send you that. That was, I think, something that came from you.
Right. I sent you that.
From Meta.
Yeah. It's like, what will they do next? And I'm like, my God, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers for these people.
I think everybody's going to be fine. Yeah.
I think these kids are going to make it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw your guy, Moses Sumney, was recently traveling abroad. He seems to be doing well.
Uh-huh. I think The Weeknd's career continues to continue unabated successfully. Rachel Sennett is in a movie this weekend, Bottoms.
We do a lot of, in addition to Zelda and lectures about alternative rock, we watch a lot of The Simpsons in my household. And so Hank Azaria, really a legend.
Yeah.
Even before his performance.
Eli Roth directed some of the adaptation of Borderlands, the movie.
Right, so he's fine.
Yeah.
I'm curious, well, it's a weird one. I mean, as happy as I am that there
are
won't
you really
be more
surprised that The Idol was canceled?
No,
right?
No, it was.
Does
never
it seem like maybe we are going through a period aside from the book clearing part that was kind of happening during this strike that The Great is canceled after three seasons,
right.
The Idol is canceled after one season. We talked a little bit about how many people are really watching shows, you know, and
yes.
data transparency. I don't think this is the same thing. I think that The Idol, at least in the beginning, was fairly successful because it had generated so much buzz that people were checking it out. But do you think that we are looking at a couple of like, oh, can't believe they canceled that?
Well, I don't want to be hyperbolic because, you know, that's not my brand. I do think, broadly speaking, The Idol was bad for the world. But if you pull out to like a much, you know, 10,000 foot view, I do become more sympathetic to it because it is a insane swing. It was unique in many ways. And the fact that it was allowed to continue in its second iteration after basically shelving the first 5 hours that were shot, but also just the very specific to these creators manner in which it was weird. You know, I've said this before and I'm white knuckling through saying it. Like I would rather have artistic swings and misses than the other half of this conversation, which is, and I think is going to only increase, that there is going to be industry contraction and there will be fewer shows. And, you know, not to be unsympathetic about on the other side, like there are too many shows. And there are a lot of shows that exist or get renewed, I think, because of good intentions or good creative relationships. But the argument about, you know, everyone hates this framing, but like, what's this for? Who's this for? What is the purpose of making this? It gets a little muddier, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're too much in it to really be able to parse what every cancellation or renewal means.
Right.
But let me paint it with this wide brush. I was not surprised that The Idol was not renewed, that I think that is unrelated to the strike. I also wasn't, as much as I admire everyone who was involved in it, I was not that surprised to see Amazon change their mind about more episodes of A League of Their Own.
Mm-hmm.
Which show did I like watching more? A League of Their Own. Unquestionably, I enjoyed that more. There was a lot to like in that show. There were great performances. But the first season was good. When it was renewed, it did feel like kind of a weird courtesy renewal, right? It was like Amazon is giving the creators, Abby Jacobson and Will Graham, like an opportunity to wrap up the show with like four additional episodes or whatever. And then they very shabbily rescinded that green light. And I say shabbily because by all accounts, they were like, they told the creative team 20 minutes before they released it to the trades and blamed it on the strike, which I don't think is true. I just think rather it's part of the larger correction and contraction we're going to be seeing from these companies as they reassess what they're doing and who they're doing it for. They did the same thing with The Peripheral, which, did you watch any of that?
No.
And that's the Jonathan Nolan, Lisa Joy series, twisty sci-fi show with our old Amtrak buddy, right?
Chloe Grace Moretz, yes.
once we rode a train with her, so clearly. To
why are you talking like John Steinbeck? We dug coal with Clay.
It's because I just listened to Mike Lombardi on with Bill, and every player Lombardi's like, I watched him lose function in his leg in front of me. Hell of a player. It's a damn shame what they did to that dog. And then he's like, goes on about whatever the question is. I love it. Anyway, it's going to be a weird era, and I think that for as dissimilar as those shows are, this is totally arbitrary to grab A League of Their Own and The Idol, but I think they couldn't have less in common, but they are at the extremes of what I feel like we're going to be losing. And from this vantage point, I think they are both a loss in a way, from a previous moment of the industry that is rapidly going away.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And I want to, I want to stop that conversation there only because you did say something about like the who's it for and what is it doing. And I want to save that for something a little later in the
Whoa,
podcast, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Before we get into Justified and before we get into Reservation Dogs, we got hit with a barrage of trailers. It's like festival week right now. Sean and Amanda from The Big Picture are both currently at festivals, and they're taking in some cinema.
That's nice.
And we got hit with the killer trailer from David Fincher. And maybe the most important thing that's ever happened to me is the Ferrari trailer finally returned to the big screen from my guy, Michael Mann, who essentially has not made anything since Black Hat, not made a feature since Black Hat.
Is that true?
Yeah, well, he worked on Tokyo Vice, and I think he's been trying to get a variety of things off the tarmac.
The Heat 2 book and then potential movie.
Yes, and he did a very interesting piece in Variety, an interview with Variety, where he talks about like basically being in a race against the clock and a race against the industry to get all the things that are in his head on the screen before his time here is over because he's 80.
Where's he going?
No, I mean, I think it's... Oh. I think we're actually seeing this with a whole sort of band of filmmakers. Like
And politicians.
Yes, I prefer the filmmakers, but like Scorsese, Paul Schrader, Clint Eastwood, you know, like Michael Mann, like guys who are getting up there in age and are.
Did you say Ridley Scott?
Ridley Scott, yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, we have a Ridley Scott, Martin Scorsese film, and a Michael Mann film coming out this year that might not ever happen again, where the three of them are releasing a film in the same year. What did you think of the Ferrari trailer?
So, I just want to like, I need your help with something because,
okay.
You know, I there were a couple of years where I wasn't really going to the cinema as much as I do now.
That doesn't stop you from having very strong opinions about it.
God bless.
Yeah.
Is this a prequel to Ford v. Ferrari or is this a sequel or is this like a breakout? You know what I mean? In the same way like Hobbs and Shaw was related to the Fast and
I'm
Furious.
I'm glad you're taking it seriously. Like, I'm glad I say this is the most important movie to come out for me.
Am I wrong?
While.
I didn't see that movie. So that movie
you
was
didn't
about,
see Ford versus Ferrari?
No.
Oh my God, you would love it.
But that's a movie about people racing Ford cars and Ferrari cars. It's not about
Ford
the man.
Ford building a race car to race Le Mans to go against Ferrari, which is like the dominant car of the racing world.
But the man and does not appear in that film. The man Ferrari, who Adam Driver
no,
is playing.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready to be serious now. Are you ready?
Yeah. I mean, there's not much to talk about.
Record. It's a great trailer.
Yep.
It's a great trailer. It's a great trailer also because it zags, because most trailers tell you everything, and this trailer is just about speed, baby.
It's just about a guy hitting the clutch and pressing down the gas pedal and crying and being married to Penelope Cruz and possibly Shailene Woodley at the same time.
And also, if I may, and this is probably what drew me in the most, a man who clearly got a very severe haircut recently, which, you know, I felt empathy to.
Uh-huh.
I felt really seen by
the cult around your hair is pretty interesting.
Well, look, I can't help the charisma that I put into the world. I just reap the benefits. So
also really great to see Driver. You know, we haven't maybe because he was in that movie 65. It's great to see him in like a serious film with like a great filmmaker. You know,
I still find, I mean, his ascent to be the actor of this generation, I'm super into it.
Mm-hmm.
It still strikes me. I'm still surprised by it.
By far, my favorite like blog post of the last 12 years is just like Adam Driver being like, I'm good when they offered him Fantastic Four. And he's just like, Adam Driver has read this script.
I didn't see that.
And is like, no.
There was a lot of push towards that. There was a lot of
there's a lot of fantasy Reed Richards casting.
He said, know? I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the dude in WandaVision who I was always like, Will? Mephisto?
You were very devoted to that pronunciation. That was sort of a Ferrari-esque, where the I becomes an E.
Yeah.
I've always said it as Mephisto.
Mephisto. And but I was then, always like, do you think Mephisto, or no, was it him that I was always like excited about?
Yeah, you wanted the person in charge of this to be a anthropomorphic devil.
Oh, and then I also wanted Reed Richards to be like the guy waiting outside of the tent.
There has
right?
never been a moment that we've talked about more on this podcast than the random ass beat in 102 WandaVision.
Yeah.
When Randall Park is like, let's go see the guy.
Yeah. And I was like, do you think that's Reed Richards?
You're like, I bet Krasinski did a day. I bet he fucking did a day. You were so... Is that a sliding doors moment
for
this
podcast?
Yeah,
I wonder if that was my loss of innocence.
You would be so in.
At age 43, you know, or whatever it was.
You would have been so in on the MCU if it had just given you that taste.
Yeah.
That one taste. Great trailer. Interesting accent.
Come on. Just let's let people fucking rock, man.
I'm not mad at it.
Way too controlling about this.
Driver in Italy, though. Didn't he do this in
no,
Gucci,
too? No, it's just like, because like, I was thinking about this a lot with Nicole Kidman in Lioness, because her accent is quite strange.
Right.
It's like, definitely Nicole Kidman, who I think can do a pretty flawless American accent at this point.
Yes.
Talking like an Australian who moved to Chicago 25 years ago. And I love it. And I think we should just let people cook now. I agree. I'm not going to be like, I think when it comes to Boston, it's like, look, man, either go for it and do it and get it right.
Right.
Or just be like a guy. There are so many people in Boston who don't do Boston accents.
I feel the same way about Philly. Like,
exactly.
It's the people who are like, yeah, I'm also walking here.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not it.
Yeah.
Either be Kate Winslet in Mayor of Easttown.
Right.
Or just Peters, or just be there.
Yeah.
Listen to us. We're from there.
Yeah.
You know, we root for the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. We don't say Eagles. We say Mephisto.
Yes. I was like, hand me a bottle of water.
A bottle? Yes. You do. It's fine. I think the trailer looks great.
Uh-huh.
My whole thing this year is movies are good. I'm interested in movies. And I'm excited. This also seems to be, I'm not the guy to ask this or answer this question.
Thank God we're potting about
it. But no, but like, how, maybe we'll ask Sean, or maybe you know, like, how did he shoot this? Because
how did Michael Mann shoot this?
Well, because one of the last Michael Mann movies, remember Public Enemies?
I do.
That was the one before Black Hat?
It was.
And that was, famously, he's like, I'm doing this all digital.
I don't.
And it looked a little weird.
It didn't look, well, for me, the digital is the juice. You know, I kind of love where he's taken the medium with, you know, in Black Hat, perhaps a film I'll be talking about at length soon. Mm-hmm. He was like running around with like lipstick cameras, like little, like essentially GoPros and stuff in,
that's cool,
in Hong Kong, you know? So it's like, he is, if you're going to go digital, it's the same thing with Kate Winslet and the accent. It's like, mm-hmm, if you're going to go digi, go all the way. You know?
My thing is, I go around and I turn motion smoothing on whenever I'm near a television.
Yeah. So dude, what is it? What does Ahsoka look like with motion smoothing on?
It's actually, you just see the green screen. You don't see anybody
no
on
green
it.
Screen. It's the volume, baby. There is no green.
You just see the volume.
Okay.
You just see a bunch of guys standing around Manhattan Beach being like, when's lunch?
That
show has big when's lunch energy.
We're going to address Ahsoka probably at some later date.
Okay, but why don't you, so other than the Michael Mann of it, because you keep turning to me like I'm going to drop gems about Ferrari. I'm not. I'm excited to see it. What makes this for you cinemaphile?
It's got all of the sort of hallmarks of a man thing. A man obsessed with greatness, a man alienated from his family.
This is all man, two ends.
Man's interests in man with one end against, like, you know, some sort of like massive obstacle, which is not like, obviously.
I'm married to too many beautiful women. Oi! Oh! I said oi. I forgot he wasn't Jewish.
I can tell when you don't want to talk about something.
I don't have anything to contribute. I want to see this movie. Yeah, I watched the trailer.
I want to see it too. I mean, we're just saying this trailer is awesome. I can't wait for it. I actually think in the long tail of history, Michael Mann just doesn't miss.
This is also a soft...
What's your favorite Michael Mann
movie?
This
is a backdoor pilot for our new podcast called Watchables, where you're like, you want to watch this? I'm like, I would watch that.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
It's also a backdoor for my podcast. It's Raining Man with two N's.
That's good. Well, that's a tough one because, I mean, Heat's the best one.
Uh-huh.
But I love Collateral so much.
Yeah.
Thief is really good too.
Those are three movies. Those are three great movies.
Those are three unimpeachable. This is how classic what I'm movies. Saying.
He doesn't. I think Public Enemies is a miss.
Yeah.
I think most of the horse community would call Luck a miss.
Didn't we just do when we were in Philadelphia? Didn't we do a podcast about how you should just be potting to a horse?
Yeah,
is that know. Is that first of all, it's a television show, so I thought we were talking about his movies. Yeah. But like, do you check in with the horse community often?
I mean, whenever a Taylor Sheridan show is on, yeah.
Just the Ladies of Rohan Reddit group.
Hey. Just come like, on hey. Now. Did you say that there was like a Rohirrim like animated show that they're like
a what? I'm sorry?
Rohirrim, you know?
I thought you were saying Rogue Hero, but you had the same stroke that caused you to drop the coffee pot live on my.
You know what? I want to change the subject. I feel like
okay, what's your left field, Michael May? Is there like one that you're going to make a case? Like Black Hat?
Black Hat is actually incredibly rewatchable. Mm-hmm. It's just relatively incoherent in its current form. Mm-hmm. And keep an eye out for that director's cut coming mm-hmm. on the Blu-ray because they aired it once on FX.
Really?
During like a Man retrospective something. And there's a director's cut where he kind of fixes the plot a bit. But
I never saw it. That's Hemsworth, right?
Yeah. Black Hat is essentially like an unfinished movie in some ways.
I have a lot of time for Hemsworth. Did you see his quotes about would he make Thor 5?
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him about like Thor 4. And he was like, perhaps we had a bit too much fun with that one.
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah.
He gets it.
I don't know if it was the fun that was the problem.
They were having fun.
Yeah.
We weren't. Okay. And then what's our other trailer?
Well, The Killer, you know, Dave.
This is great.
Yeah.
This looked so
good. David Fincher
good.
With Michael Fassbender starring as a hitman having a crisis of conscience or maybe losing his grip. Co-starring Arliss Howard.
This, you're going in order of billing, too. This is not like some
Charles Parnell.
My guy, Briar Patch King.
And Tilda Swinton.
Those are Rushmore performers for me if you could have 30 actors on Rushmore. That's a bad example, but I love them.
Yeah. This looks like, I think I've seen people compare it to Dragon Tattoo. I've seen people compare it to the kind of early Fight Club, Panic Room kind of verve. Mm-hmm. He's always directs with verve. This looks like so awesome. It is also on Netflix, so I guess it's only going to be in theaters briefly.
I will go see that in
I
theater.
I will watch him. Yeah.
David Fincher can make any movie he wants with anyone he wants at any time. And
that's big of you.
I love, you're welcome. What I mean is, I love when filmmakers at his level are like, I decide what actors I want.
Right.
I'm not like market testing this. I'm not collaborating with a studio on finding a vehicle for whomever. Our guy Fassbender's been a little quiet.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome.
He's also a guy seduced by the great roaring engines of fine sports cars.
In his real life.
Yeah. But right. I think that is partially why he has not been working that much. Also, he's married to Alicia Vikander, and I think they had a kid.
I mean, seems like he's making great choices up to and including this movie. Yeah. But that Fincher's vision for the movies that he makes are so specific because you can see this sort of compromise all the time, and I understand why it exists, but certain directors who are like, I know exactly how I want to shoot this. I know exactly the cinematographer I want to use. The needle drop has to be this song. It has to be just so. But I understand that in order to make a movie in this, the year of our Lord, Ryan Reynolds will be the lead of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm saying Ryan Reynolds intentionally because he's a big star. And last week or on Monday, I was like, I was very pro his business decision.
Sure.
I'm not trying to drag him.
Right.
But I'm saying is that's often a round peg into a square hole. Fincher is so exacting. He knows exactly who he wants in every role, and you have to trust that they're the right people for it. I just thought that this whole trailer, everything about it just looked immaculate.
Very cool.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right, let's move on to some TV stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a little bit about Justified after the first two episodes.
We did.
And I think that I have had like a little bit of a running commentary on City Primeval throughout, but we have not like done episode by episode breakdowns. Maybe come as a bit of a shock because I think that something where it's like Justified is coming back, yeah, adapting a Detroit Elmore Leonard novel, that would have been like grist for the mill for us. But I think because of the way the story was told, and maybe it's just like a kind of wake up call about Elmore Leonard, is like Elmore Leonard is not a like, what do you think happens next kind of guy. Mm-hmm. It's like a very much atmospheric hangout kind of experience. I mean, I think that he has some novels that are obviously like twisty and turny, but to me, they're mostly like...
Also, I don't put them down. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, I read them and I'm having the time of my life over the course of 2.5 days. And then...
Yeah. There's nothing like when you pick up an Elmore Leonard novel you've read three times and realize you can't totally remember what happens in it. So you're
no
like,
idea.
Good, I can mm-hmm, watch this, read this again. So anyway, I would say that Justified... I'll say this about the finale. Mm-hmm. A relatively satisfying ending to a relatively satisfying show that maybe lacked a bit of crackle. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's intentional because the main character is now in his late middle age, let's just say, or middle age, and is sort of going through a bit of like an adjustment period in his life. He's in a new town in Detroit. I've read some interesting commentary, like Vulture's done some really good stuff about, Roxana did stuff about like whether or not like Raylan works in Detroit,
yeah,
you know, and whether or not Raylan works outside of Boyd Crowder and Harlan, mm-hmm, in Kentucky. And what do you know? Oh, and I should say, we're going to spoil the end of Justified City Primeval now. So if you haven't watched it and you're catching up, skip this. What do you know? Boyd Crowder shows up at the end of City Primeval, not as a, oh, Boyd Crowder is also in Michigan federal, mm-hmm, jail, or there's just like a cameo or something like that. It is essentially like a backdoor pilot.
Yep.
It is... At the end of sort of City Primeval, Raylan is back in Florida, has quit the Marshal Service, has made up with his daughter, is sitting on a boat in the harbor in Miami or somewhere, or Tampa, and is like chilling. He's really, really just got it all together. And he gets an alert on his phone that there has been a escape from federal penitentiary. And we get a whole side scene of Boyd Crowder in jail, in federal jail. He is escorted out of jail by one of the sort of correctional facility officers, is played by Luis Guzman, mm-hmm, veteran of other Elmore Leonard adaptations, and a woman, and he breaks out of prison and like is driving to Mexico. So it's like, you guys are making a Boyd and Raylan show, right? I think. And it's a really, really, really interesting twist on, first of all, like it essentially erases the place that Raylan has gotten to in his life.
Yes.
And second of all is like, we know what works. And
well, that's my question.
It's Raylan and Boyd.
Is it kind of a, did this strike you as a backdoor pilot of being like, you like this? Would you like more?
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out. Or did you feel like it was a almost in-game hedge bet, basically being like, thank you for letting us try this. We flexed some different muscles. We tried to update some stuff and intentionally took a different tone. But don't worry. We know, we also know what works best. So, did you get that vibe and did you have an opinion
about that? One of the
things
that I thought was tough about City Primeval, which I also liked a lot of. I liked Maren Ireland in it. I liked Norbert Leo Butz in it. I liked
those guys were great.
Yeah, I liked actually
Vondi Curtis Hall
all
was great.
Of the performances. I felt like it was a little bit handcuffed to the book at sometimes. And I feel like there's parts of Elmore Leonard that you're just like, what's cool about this is the time and place it's set and how it feels like what Detroit at this period must have felt like. And there was something almost like, it's set in the present day, but doesn't feel like it. And it's set in Detroit, but doesn't really feel like it. And there was something kind of like off about that. And there's even like the references or the cliches that people say or the tropes that people do all feel like just a little bit out of time.
I completely agreed with that. That was also a vibe that I got too, because Detroit is such a wonderfully specific place. And I feel like Elmore Leonard or... Were He Still With Us, or another Detroit crime writer, not necessarily of Elmore Leonard's stature or fame, but could maybe have updated it and have connected, you know, been like Doc Brown and Back to the Future and grabbed the cable of what was incredible about Detroit in 1978 and whatever is still true about those same things today and connected them and made them feel lived in. But I too was stuck in a kind of uncanny valley between like the Detroit that I love in his books, the Detroit that I'm interested in reality, and this sort of middle place that the show put us into.
Here's a good example. They're one of the, it's not even a MacGuffin, but it's like one of the sort of totems of the show is this little black book that the judge played by Keith David in the beginning of the series has that is essentially a unencrypted bribe guide of all city officials that have been taking payoffs, got given him payoffs, presumably, whatever. And it's supposed to be this judge's collateral that he holds over all these people so that he can essentially get away with being a piece of shit.
Untouchable.
Yeah, but everybody has to go along with it because he has all the dirt. And he's got this mythical little black book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit difficult in 2023 for that not to be subpoenaed text messages. Or that was just... That's a very 1979, 1984 way of having bribes recorded. And... I think that was that's indicative of like the kind of like that needed a little bit of updating for 2023.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it doesn't all have to be get me CCTV footage and then run his face against facial recognition software. Like,
let's hope.
Let's, you know, like Lioness does that a lot. But I will say this for Lioness, it feels like technologically and referentially, for the most part, relatively recent. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a moment, it can be done. There's a moment in the killer. The trailer that we're just talking about, the Fincher trailer, where you're watching it,
he's
and you're
an
like,
Apple Watch on.
This could be any time.
Yeah.
But the juxtaposition of a guy who appears to be anachronistic, about to assassinate someone. We've seen this in movies for decades. But his Apple Watch is noticing his heart rate. Great shot.
Yeah.
Great idea. You can integrate it when you have a full vision. But often I think you're right. You can feel the things that were dragged across the years. Because you like them more, or because you make a decision not about what's best for the story, about what would be least bad. And I think to your point, just having it be the book is less bad than having it be, you know, an encrypted thumb drive, because that wouldn't feel like Justified and it wouldn't feel like Elmore Leonard.
Yeah. So I think it was like I was a fan, if not like a super enthusiastic fan of the miniseries. I would be broadly supportive of them trying to find other Elmore Leonard novels to work Raylan into or adapt other Raylan featured, because he's in Pronto, right?
Pronto and Riding the Rap.
Right. And Riding the Rap. Yeah. I think that you could figure something out with Pronto. I mean, again, though, it's like that's like World War II paintings being hidden by somebody, right? Like,
also, Raylan is not the main character. The main character is a bookie.
Right.
You know, who, when I read those books, I was like, this is a great part for my guy, Gene Hackman.
Right. This is like, if you wanted to adapt The Sting,
that
would be hard because the internet exists, you know?
I was just thinking, did we talk about it? I just watched that again on the plane.
Yeah.
Perfect movie. all about people being like, I'm in this town now and you've never heard of me.
Yes. And also, like, the Western Union is going to release the names of the horse race. Anyway, I thought it was really, I think that it's been a divisive, but like broadly liked, if not loved, mm-hmm. adaptation. And your question is really good. Was it a hedge? Was it a carrot, like, to like the Justified diehards? You know, other people come back from Justified briefly. Raylan's ex-wife, Winona, is in the show, played by Natalie Z. But like, I wonder whether or not, like, this is like, we're already rolling on like Raylan chasing down Boyd in Mexico.
But here's another question. Raylan chasing down Boyd in Mexico would be a Justified project. It would not necessarily
be... It could be an Eastbound and Down project. He could run into Kenny Powers while like, if they timed it right.
God. And what was Sudeikis' character's name? Who dies
Shane.
In these... Yeah. Now you're just making me like it more. What I mean is, it would be a Justified project, less an Elmore Leonard adaptation. Because where Justified ended up...
Was, I think that would be right.
I think one of the secrets of Justified, that maybe we don't want to admit, even though we like the show, is that it was increasingly less an Elmore Leonard adaptation as it was an Elmore Leonard suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
When Elmore Leonard wrote about Raylan, he wrote some short stories and then a novel later, after the show had premiered.
He'd been inspired by it, essentially, yeah.
But the character in the books is a supporting character in Florida, and fish out of water in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Him chasing down Boyd would be a creation of the creative team that has steered Justified and now City Primeval, right? I assume.
Yeah.
Because there's no text. That might be a good thing. It definitely changes our vision, which is weird to run against what we want, since I feel like most shows service us. But we were like, oh, this is perfect because this can be Prime Suspect or Luther or the British
yes.
model.
I was like, they could do 5 episodes of Raylan every 3 years and mess around with a different Leonard adaptation.
But
now it seems like they are like once more under the breach with the two most beloved characters from the show.
But they could also be like taking the parts of our advice, or let's be honest, they're not listening to us at all. But I'm saying like of our advice that works for them, which is, this can be Timothy Oliphant's Prime Suspect or his Luther.
Mm-hmm.
One of them happened to be an Elmore Leonard, but the rest is just going to be Justified.
Right.
But we will do it in this model where we will do 8 episodes every 2 or 3 years.
So this kind of leads right into Reservation Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that you and I, when we talk, we can get a little Goldilocks with it, where we're like, it's too soft, too hard. Like, I want my shows to be routinely entertaining, but really push the boundaries of what TV can be, you know? And then I think sometimes when a show will announce its intention, so like, say, Twin Peaks The Return,
mm-hmm.
fucking anything could have happened with that show, and you would have been like, I'm locked in. I'm going with David Lynch wherever he wants to take me, and he literally took you everywhere.
Yes.
But, you know, when you get something like, say, City of Primeval, and to some extent Reservation Dogs, although I think in the grand scheme of things that I'm pretty into like what Sterling Harjo and his team are trying to do with this season. And it is remarkable that they are doing it. You know, it is a really like inventive and brave thing to do, to have this beloved group of characters and try to tell a different story that's overlaid on top of their story.
Yes.
To make their story feel even grander to me, you know? And what I'm referring to is, over the first 2 episodes of this 3rd season of Reservation Dogs, we get introduced to this character played by Graham Greene named Maximus, who's this sort of outcast living mm-hmm. outside of society. You're like, oh, that's an interesting little wrinkle to this show, and it's an interesting way to bring Bear back to the community, but cool. And as this season has gone along, it seems increasingly clear that it's kind of about this guy, Maximus, and that Maximus's treatment by his community and his relationship to society and his relationship to himself and all these different things is kind of the story that they're telling. Now, this may turn out to be 40% of the season, but right now feels like it's 70% of the season. He's gotten his own flashback episode. He's been in the first 2 episodes, and he's largely talked about for the last 15 minutes of
yep.
the most recent episode, Frankfurter Sandwich. What do you think of this?
I think it's really odd. I'm not against it. I'm looking forward to the end of the season. I appreciate the Twin Peaks comparison, both because it drew me in
mm-hmm.
as your first listener mm-hmm. before this goes out into the world, but also because Sterling Harjo as a creator and filmmaker has earned our trust for where he's driving this particular car. So I'm intrigued. And it did make me think of other shows. So basically, like the last few years of television, the way we've talked about it, have been primarily the beginning of the show asks a question, and then the series is a journey, sometimes a digressive journey, to answer that question. But you go into it knowing there will be an end that will either satisfy or not satisfy. And that's true of Succession. That's true. And it's true of Reservation Dogs. And it was about, you know, it was about these four kids dealing with the trauma of the death of their friend Daniel, mm-hmm. and their desire to leave this place and go to California.
Yeah.
As we've discussed over the last few weeks, that all happened. That was a two-season story.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was done. And when I had a, you know, a little bit of a, felt out of rhythm with the show when it returned with the season premiere and got on the mic with you. And I was like, did they, now do I understand why they're ending the show this season? Because they told the story and now they're sort of kind of just not twiddling their thumbs, but just kind of cleaning out their notebooks in the end game. And this is all going to be resolution. That's not exactly what it is. I think the broad strokes of the series are not only present, they're being reinforced by this season, which is something that I said the other day, which is it's not actually about the younger generation leaving. It's about generations
yeah.
and generations talking yes. to each other and supporting each other and being reborn as each other and playing roles for each other. And that being how a society sustains itself. That is powerful stuff. That is heavy stuff. And often, even in the course of this season, which has been up and down, in my opinion, it has been beautiful stuff.
Yeah. And also, when those kinds of stories get told, you think of them as very heavy dramas,
mm-hmm.
usually
yes. Yes.
60 minute, you know, like if not mini series, is like when you're talking, I'm thinking of like the Thornburns
yeah.
or something.
But with anguish.
Yeah. And this is, I think what this last episode is 23 minutes long and has fart jokes and like deflates all the moments of sentimentality.
Yes.
Until you get the happy, bittersweet but funny moment at the very end of the episode where everybody's drinking big gulps out in a field.
And let me put a pin in where I was going with that first thought just to say, if this season and this story, not this season, if this show does nothing else with its storytelling, God, I'm so grateful for it because I don't know if you, did you see the New York Magazine had a cover story on how trauma became our go-to story?
I saw that.
For everything. And, no, and we've talked about this actually. We've been in the field with this, talking about this show to show. I mean, there are characters just on a whiteboard on the series that would have plenty of reason to play that card. This show, in a with different creators and a different point of view, could be absolute tragedy
mm-hmm.
in terms of what a lot of these people have gone through and these characters, even these kids. I love so much and I'm so grateful to Reservation Dogs and Cyril and Harjo because these are characters who are legitimately traumatized, but also have resources of humor in their lives and they have resilience and they have a different relationship with their own past than what we have been given. It doesn't diminish the emotional intensity of what they've gone through. Each generation now I'm talking about as the show is illustrated, it's just a different way into it. And I'm finding that really compelling. And I think it's a good antidote to a lot of the types of storytelling we've been enduring over the last few years on TV. All of this said, the sort of side-dooring of Maximus as the hero and as the story of the season is, I bump on it a little bit. I bumped him a little bit.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's like a little bit like poochy, like in The Simpsons, like you were here the whole time.
I know what you mean.
Or even the way, like there was a moment in this episode that we're talking about last night. And look, Zahn McLaren is so elite on this show. He's always a good actor. And it's so awesome to see him be so funny and so goofy. Wes Studi as Bucky, just
yeah.
consistently. Again, just doing stuff we've never seen this guy do. And we've been watching him be in movies, Michael Mann movie, for years. Unless he was in a second one that I'm not remembering.
He was in Heat.
Yes, two movies, yeah. Right. Thank you, I knew it. It's incredible.
He also played Mike Wallace in The Insider.
You know, what they do with makeup in that movie, it's amazing. This is wonderful stuff. When at the end of this moving episode where these older guys take out cheese and they're like, we're going to teach you how to fish, but it's going to be funny and it's going to be digressive or whatever, and we're going to learn as much from you as you learn from us. I'm all in. I'm all in for it. And I'm all in for the generations looking after each other. I love the casual way everyone is everyone's uncle. Everyone is related and everyone's looking out for each other. This isn't necessarily the relationship between these people we'd seen in previous weeks, but why not?
Mm-hmm.
because I believe it. That's actually how it works in this community. All of that said, when Bucky is like, you know, we also had a friend. His name was Maximus. You remind us of him. It felt a little bit like, you know, Grand Admiral Thrawn was pretty scary too.
No, it didn't.
Like a little bit.
No, it didn't.
Now, that's not fair. That's a big, big.
It did. I know what you mean.
In the sense that I was like,
this season has been about how people become myth and how people become like ghost stories or legends or, you know, warnings or even things that you...
Like Ezra?
Yeah, but like you know...
Sorry, I'm done.
Like the Dear Lady.
Yes.
Maximus.
Yes.
Bigfoot. Like these ideas that the like you're just like, oh, like... The people you look at your own life and you're like, what does my life amount to? Who am I? Does anybody care about me? Like, what is the connection I have to the larger world? And this show this year is sort of saying like, these kids who feel like they're at this precipice of adulthood and don't know who they are or where they should go or what they should do and what to do with these feelings. And these guys are, yes, maybe somewhat on the nose saying like, you're connected to larger stories. And people who came before you went through some of the stuff that you went through, and maybe we didn't deal with it that way. Was it like, did it feel like as not as like necessarily like as an organic moment as some previous episodes have? I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, this is also a show that like Jesus walks around the LA with in the finale of the second season.
I think you're making a good point. And, it's just I think I'm speaking to two things. I think it's a sign of a healthy product and an exercise and piece of art, frankly, that when you talk about it in the grand strokes and the thematic strokes and the emotional strokes, it all holds together.
Yeah.
It works. And it's very moving to consider what the show is saying. That the show is able to take its focus off of, because one of the things we'd say in the first season was, you know, there'd be the Willie Jack episode or the bear episode, and you'd miss the other ones, but you'd realize that the show was telling you something about everyone, even when everyone was not on screen. So this season is taking that to an even greater degree where the main characters, other than the episode in the IHS 2 weeks ago, haven't really shared, it hasn't really been about their adventuring. It's been about the larger scope of the community. But when you see the echoes, you understand. And one of the things that I wonder if this is heading to, and I think this is quite graceful if it is the show isn't presuming to tell us what's going to happen to our main four, to Allura, Dannon, and Bear and everyone, because that's unwritten. It's just showing us echoes and patterns and letting them make their own choices and mistakes, but suggesting that there are things that connect everyone. All of that, super into it, love talking about it. But,
yeah,
just on a week-to-week TV viewer
fan, I totally get it.
There are some things that feel less organic to me this season, because when the show is at its absolute apex, and I have no doubt it will return to that, it manages the poetry and prose better than anything else.
Yeah,
it does both at the same time, where it makes these grand societal cultural statements and also makes you just love the character and feel like this is a real lived-in moment, regardless of if the person on screen has hooves or not. And this season... I felt the gear turning more. And so when Wes Studi's like, we had a friend named Maximus, my first thought was, you, the actor, were just told about this.
Mm.
We only saw your flashback version with this person. That's not accurate. I was not on set. I feel like the way that he builds this community of performers, they know what's going on and they sell the moments. That was just me bumping in a way. I'm just here to report me.
I got you.
I'm here to tell my truth as I struggle with the ups and downs of a show that is generally one of the best on television.
Speaking of truth, do you want to hit on?
Boy, you're good at this.
How to with John Wilson briefly?
Did you go to school for podcasting?
No, it just comes to me naturally.
It's really wild.
Yeah,
it's really a gift.
Yeah, I went to school for creative writing.
You still have time. We'd established that. The great novel's coming. We said that last week.
What did you think of this very, 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 was it surprising? Was this episode of John Wilson surprising to you?
It was. So we're going to talk about, this was the penultimate episode.
Of the series. Of a series that we have only recently adopted as a watch talking
point. Well, I didn't know I don't think we were watching it concurrently. I think that we talked about it when it started.
We did, and then I think I like kind of like was in and out, but never like it's time to watch John Wilson alarm clock. And now I guess I have to.
Well, this is also an example of not, you know, it's not at all like Reservation Dogs, but when a creator is just like, okay, I want to use this for something else. I have this platform, I have this moment, I have this budget. I'm going to grab the reins and steer in a different direction and one that might surprise you. Because our understanding, it's funny how like parochial we, I can say I, but I imagine I'm not the only one, viewers can be about shows.
Mm-hmm.
That you watch a season or two of How To with John Wilson, which is totally unique in so many ways, but the brain just wants to relax things and put them into categories. And the category the show went into for me was absolutely idiosyncratic, lovely, weird thing that could go on for 3 or 23 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Because this guy's just kind of a weirdo who loves film and stuff, and there'll always be digressions for him. At no point was I like, this is an auteurish project about a guy who has been doing this sort of thing in the, not in the shadows, but not on HBO. And then his relationship with his own, what, instrument?
Yeah.
Canvas, I mean, is going to change. And the final season is going to be about his like body rejecting the organ almost, you know, in a way that took a really surprising turn.
I like that it's three seasons because it's the three steps of the magic trick, and now here's the reveal.
Oh, that's
and
good.
You watch this last episode, this most recent episode, How to Watch Birds, and there's a shot of a dog stuck out on a ledge of a third floor of a New York City apartment building, and you can hear all these people saying like, oh my God, I hope the dog gets back. And it gets back inside of a window. I think a fire rescue person does that. But while I was watching, I was like, what are the chances that he's there for this? You know?
Yes.
I was like, that's pretty crazy. He gets some really amazing stuff. Now, I remember when I had a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is years ago.
This is a long time ago. You're just like, oh my God, there's so much food on the ground because the dog tries to eat all of it. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, when you're walking around New York City, you don't really think about it. But like, there was a ton of food on the ground in New York City and other stuff. And so I was like, well, maybe it's just like this guy is showing us that if you open your eyes to different things, you'll like Googling Ron Howard's net worth, you'll find something out. And like, if you open your eyes to like what's above you or what's below you or whatever, like different things happen. And then as this episode goes along, John Wilson sort of starts to say, sometimes like these things that seem like miracles of slices of life are actually things that I have orchestrated to some extent.
It's twofold. I mean, there is the fact that he just films a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And then he and his creative team shape it. They go through the archives of what he's filmed and then they tailor his monologue, which
it's not like he's like, I'd like to do an episode about looking up in the sky. And then that day I got a dog on a ledge. No, it's like, you got a dog on a ledge and then fit it into this episode.
Yes, there's writing here. There always is. And like, just like there are, you know, there's a documentaries or unscripted reality TV to varying degrees are written. Like we know that. This episode reached a point where he just kind of like he did about his own sort of sexual maturation 2 episodes ago, he just confesses something. In this episode though, it's about confessing that there was one holy doctor shot.
Because he needed to use a soundstage for one day.
Well, it was a combination. He wanted to use, he wished he had gotten something that he had seen online.
A toilet exploding with sewage.
Which is also perfect for the show, that this is the thing that he built his house of cards on. But then to get a tax credit from New York, he needed a one soundstage day. So they built a bathroom and then exploded it with fake human waste.
Yeah.
But this then sort of pushes him into an edge of like conspiracy theorists about the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up driving around rural, I think, Pennsylvania.
With a guy named Bruce Beveridge.
Incredible name.
Yeah.
Who is a leading voice in Titanic skepticism.
Uh-huh.
That it wasn't the Titanic that sank. It was its sister vessel, the Apollo.
Or Olympia or something.
Olympia?
Like that.
The Olympia, yes. And then he wants to confess his own lie to him about the shot. And it's really wild, intense scene. Oh, and he's also saying he's getting these emails saying to be in a hotel room at a certain time to learn the whole story. And he's parked in front of like a shaky O'Flanagan's by a Best Western. And He confesses it to the guy who gets a very hostile phone call from his mother. And then when he says, like, do you ever feel like you have to tell the truth about things? The guy, Bruce Beveridge, like, you can't script this part. Like, he reddens in a very odd way and is like, I used to be a police officer. And let me tell you, there are times when faking the evidence is better for everyone.
Yeah.
And then John Wilson goes to the hotel. There's no one in the room. And when he comes back out, and this is shot like
a thriller.
Blair Witch,
yes.
Kind of.
And I will mention that in a Daily Beast interview, John Wilson talks about collaborating with Steven Soderbergh on this part.
Does he?
Yes.
The Hidden Hand of Steve?
Yeah.
It's great. Did you talk to Soderbergh about that?
I did not. I did not know that this was coming. Yeah.
A rare miss from you.
Couldn't be you.
The car with Bruce Beveridge in it explodes.
Yeah, in the parking lot of the Best Western.
And suddenly you are forced to question, like, what are you even watching? What have you been watching? And who is in charge of it? It was a pretty thrilling TV moment.
Yes.
I thought.
Yeah. And then at the end, we find that Bruce is still with us.
And smirking, kind of, because he was in on it.
I don't know whether or not the next episode of John Wilson will go into what happened on this episode of John Wilson.
Historically, it has not been a serialized
continuing adventures, but this will also be the series finale of John Wilson.
This also is a good time to remind people that Nathan Fielder is the executive producer of the show, and clearly they have some things in common. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. It was pretty exciting, but don't you think?
I just like when we get to the end of pods and you're like, that was pretty good.
I liked it.
Yeah.
This is our show, The Watchables. Yeah. You guys should check this out. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, we spent too much time doing spaghetti carbonara stuff with Adam Driver and now we're here.
If I may.
Huh?
There is a common thread here about who is in charge and who's telling the stories. And that one of the consistently most compelling or surprising or rewarding veins to tap in making these shows is that reassertion of power, grabbing the reins. Whose story is this? As you said, who is it for, and who am I answering to? And it's funny, just like how calm we get once we realize who's driving the bus. As long as they drive it on a familiar route for like two episodes, we're like, oh, I get it now. I get that John Wilson is narrating some weird stuff and it's New York and how lucky he was to get all this stuff and it all works out and it's amusing for a half hour. But this guy is living inside of the machine. He's playing a character that's himself based on things he's really done and he's chafing against it.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is not a highly rated show, but and it's probably not for everyone. But I find that really interesting. I find that really interesting even in this moment of like industry unrest. Where there's a movement, you know, a conversation among showrunners or people being like, oh, everything would just be easier if we went back to procedurals. Like, we'd be getting paid more and everyone would be happy. But then there are people who got into TV to be like, no, I want to
do different shit.
I want to tell you my story.
Yeah, right.
And I don't want that. And I understand that it's a riskier life, but making art is always a little bit of a riskier life. Like, this isn't supposed to be driving a bus route, to kind of reuse my same metaphor twice. So I think I said car before. So, not a Ferrari, to be clear. You want to let me die on this island, or should we wrap it up?
Talking about Zelda?
So in Zelda, you can build vehicles now.
Can you really?
Yes, you can build anything.
Why?
Okay, so
you can play us.
Kaya, turn off my mic. At the beginning of the sequel, Link gets a new hand.
Maybe we should.
And it's a dead god's hand, and it has abilities, including one where you can take things in the physical world and combine them. And you can take anything and build anything. And there's footage on the internet of anything, but of people building the Batmobile from the Michael Keaton movies or a drone.
In Zelda.
Yes. You can build giant mech suits. You can, like, people have way too much time. I cannot do this. I can barely build a fucking
plane
with a fan on it.
Can I build, like, the QRF squad from Lioness to come through?
You're going to have to refamiliarize me with that squad because I'm, you know, there are a lot of squads.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. Right? You could build shit, man. That appeals. You're a creative thinker. Not me.
I like to push boundaries. Thanks to Kaya McMullen for producing us today. We will be back on Tuesday. So one day late next week because of Labor Day. Andy, enjoy your weekend.
Did you have a sense of what it's going to be like now? Now that you know
it sounds like a lot of fathering.
Just building stuff.
Yeah. a lot of paying it forward with what you've learned about the world of music. And that's what's really cool.
Anything that I've accrued to this point is just a gift to the future generations. And it's just my responsibility. Much like the elders and Reservation Dogs.
That's
so just
right.
To, you know, just to share.
That's right.
Some know how to fish. Some know how to make connections between post-punk bands and Olivia Rodrigo.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.